Good afternoon, and welcome to the Fall 2011 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Joe Keenan, Senior Editor of Retail Online Integration. I'm pleased to welcome you to another great live session, Customer Retention Best Practices. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsor of this session, Bronto. Joining me today are Teju Prabhakar, Director of Marketing at Soap.com, an online retailer of more than 25,000 health, beauty, personal care, and household products, as well as Jim Sullivan, partner at Colloquy, a global provider of enterprise loyalty publications, education, and research for loyalty marketers everywhere. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during the hour. You can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console. Lastly, if you leave this session at any time or would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Retail Marketing Virtual Show on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Thursday, September 29th. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Jim Sullivan to get us started on this discussion of how to develop and maintain loyal customers.
Well, thank you, Joe, and hello, everybody. I'm Jim Sullivan, a partner from Colloquy. I am really pleased to be here today. I'm going to work with Teju to set some things up for you, give you a little bit of perspective. I call it the loyalty landscape. Really, these days, I want to make the case that the name of the game is really all about engaging customers. That might sound familiar to you, so familiar it may be perceived as a cliche. But engagement means involvement to a point of commitment. And as we look around the landscape today, we see many more signs of whatever the opposite of commitment might be. Consumers are confronted with lots of choices. And loyalty these days means getting to the top of mind of customers. And so engaging them to the point of commitment is what I'm going to be talking about today. Then Teju is going to follow my remarks with some terrific examples from his own experience at Soap.com. So Colloquy, for those of you who know us, I'm sorry, I'll just say this quickly, and those of you who don't, Colloquy is a resource for loyalty marketers. It's been in business since 1990, soon after the dawn of the modern loyalty age. We are a publishing, research, and education resource, as Joe said, for loyalty marketers everywhere. My primary role with the company is in the research area. I'm in charge of knowledge development and acquisition. In that role, I work with academic researchers and partners from other companies who are interested in pushing the envelope in research related to all things loyalty. Now, I also have a role, of course, to write for the publications and speak in conferences and webinars like this one. So that's my role and why I'm here today. So I'm going to pull the lens back a little bit and talk about some recent research that Colloquy has done that kind of lays out the map of the landscape. This next slide is a depiction that we all may need bigger wallets here in North America. Colloquy has done three or four waves over the last decade of what we call the loyalty census here in North America. And we recently updated our latest wave of that late in 2010 and published early this year. We in North America have finally crossed the 2 billion mark in terms of loyalty program memberships for the population of the U.S. and Canada. that works out to be an average of 18 programs belonged to by the average consumer household in the United States. 18 programs in the wallet, that's an amazing amount of involvement, I guess you'd say. But here's the challenge. If you're a loyalty program manager or any marketer concerned about loyalty, you have to be thinking about, am I one of those 18? And if so, is anyone really there and engaged in what we're doing? As you see on this next slide, we're enrolled in 18 programs, but really only active in 8.4 of those. And so this is what we are considering the era of engagement. It's not enough just to grow your membership base. You've got to involve them much more deeply in your program. Now, that loyalty census, as I mentioned earlier, is a comprehensive review of the size of the loyalty program industry. Here's some growth rates that we've been seeing. The market is becoming more saturated than ever. These are the earlier waves of the research we had done. We'd seen some really robust growth in the loyalty business in the U.S. here. That growth looks like it's beginning to slow a bit. Again, some more perspective for those of you who are in multiple industries, I believe, on the phone. You'll see that the biggest sector in terms of its individual sector would be the credit and debit card programs offered by financial services companies. We are basically looking also, though, at the industries that these segments roll up into, and I understand that many of you on the phone are from various forms of retail today, and 40% of all program memberships are isolated in the segments that comprise retail. So that gives you a little bit of perspective on the size and the composition of the segments within the loyalty industry. Some growth rates over the last couple of waves of this iteration have shown lots of growth across the board in most segments, the notable kickover in growth in financial services between 2008 and 2010 was the obvious example of the pressures acting on financial services companies, both in terms of credit adoption and use on the part of consumers, but also government regulation and maybe a little bit of focus elsewhere over the last couple of years for financial services providers. And what I wanted to get to quickly was this particular fact, how much loyalty value is actually collected by consumers each year. Colloquy did a very intensive 9-part algorithm, I guess you'd say, to roll up the retail value of all of those points and miles we're collecting. And the startling fact is that $48 billion of retail collected each year in the United States. That means an airline seat at relative retail prices and the price redemption across all other categories. That's an astounding number. $48 billion is, as they say, real money. The interesting thing is, though, in the recession over the last 2 years where many U.S. households were under intense financial pressure, that $622 was a really significant blowback, I guess you'd say, to their family's finances. Yet, as you see in this build slide, only about two-thirds of that value was actually realized by the average American household, leaving about a third of it on the table. And when we look at the reasons why that is the case, it's because of that 18, the fact that we are all belonging to so many programs, we are scattering our collection effort of points and miles across many different providers. And as a result, it makes it very difficult to consolidate the retail value of that activity into a full redemption of all the rewards coming towards us. So our advice to consumers is to think long and hard about consolidating around your favorite brands and trying to maximize the economic value that patronage and loyalty means to the household. We also detect, though, a commoditization and a growing lack of differentiation among the programs themselves. And this is where this discussion of relevance needs to start. Relevance is kind of a system, if you will. There's four components of relevance. We need to appeal to our customers to engage them more fully to a point of commitment. by simply working harder to be more relevant to them. Relevance, I would define as the ability to successfully meet unmet needs at the point of need in terms of consumers. And here you see that there are these four components. This may sound a little wonky, but it's actually something good to keep in mind. The four components are spatial, temporal, individual, and channel. And what that means in English is you got to be at the place your consumers want to be. You've got to be there when they want you to be there. That you've got to personalize your offer to make it relevant for their unmet needs. And you have to be flexible across the channel of communication in which you're talking with them. I'll give you a few examples of this, and I'm sure you can see it easily. In the upper left, everyone seems to be going mobile. And Best Buy is no exception. Best Buy's Reward Zone program, very successful program. What they allow you to do is download a mobile app to your smartphone and basically do anything you could do in store on your phone, and in fact bring your phone into the store, and you are equipped with instant price comparisons, offers available just for you that day on the equipment that you may be interested in purchasing, and so on. Lots of people are going mobile, and that's a combination of both spatial and temporal relevance. Another example might be just the simple fact of channel and spatial relevance would be a check-in that someone might report via Facebook. Here, a friend of mine was waiting for a very popular breakfast place in Columbus the other day, and she basically posted that the line was out the door. And obviously, smart and savvy retailers and restaurateurs and other providers, knowing this, would might have alleviated her wait with a coupon for a free cup of coffee when she did get in the door. Another example of channel and individual preference would be the well-understood recommendation engine, for example, at Amazon, that personalizes a set of selections and suggestions each time you check in to buy something else. And then individual and temporal relevance might be embodied in some cool things we get from time to time from Groupon and other providers of promotions like these. Although I must say that this particular example of flying lessons came right before Christmas when my wife and I were thinking about actually giving our son flying lessons. So he and I took advantage of that offer. Although I don't know about you guys, but I'm also getting quite a lot of offers from Groupon that seem to deal with aprons and girl parties and things like that. And I'm not quite sure why that's the case, but that would be a good example of irrelevance, at least for somebody like me. So that's just a way to think about that, those four components. We're doing further research into that. Another thing I want to mention is that when we look across how consumers are reacting to relevance from the brands these days, there's a decline in it that Colloquy's picking up in the research that we're doing. We think that might be the result of an over-focus perhaps on the bottom level of Maslow's classic hierarchy of needs. You know, this economy has progressed over time, and what we're seeing is that consumers these days, if they've progressed in economic sense at all, are probably at higher levels of the hierarchy of needs, having met their basic level of needs with plenty of great product and service options below. They're looking for something else these days. And relevance is also a function of understanding these needs for social engagement and connection, esteem and status, and self-actualization. And we think in loyalty program contexts, you really have got to work hard on understanding, you know, where your rewards program is actually serving people. Is it still down in the basic functionality and privacy, trust, and promises of security? Or is it growing these days and really recognizing people for the patronage that they're giving you and calling them out and involving them in the program's design, especially for them individually? Many savvy marketers are across hotels and other of our sweet spot categories of financial services and retail are involving their customers in a specific dialogue with elite customer panels and allowing these elite customer panels to actually shape the future of the program. This is the kind of unmet need we think is going on. So I'm going to hurry through here. Four thoughts, relevance and action. The first thing to do would be, of course, segment your customers and deliver relevant value. Nurture the relationship for the long term. This is engagement across a life cycle. make it personal. What's in it for them? If it's not personalized these days, it's essentially a commodity. And then finally, involve them engaging their network into yours. A couple of examples. Segmentation of your customers is essentially dividing a large population into smaller groups where you can identify the unmet needs better and provide relevant solutions. I think everybody on the phone essentially knows how to do segmentation. Basically, though, I want to amplify the need to involve your current transaction data in the segments. It can tell you a lot about what your customers are demanding and what they may have as unmet needs. So involve that that transaction data and the other interaction data that you're gathering in collecting more intelligence from them in call center interactions and actual surveys and so forth. Map that back to their personally identifying information. A good structure of segmentation strategy is to basically look at across a range of potential value for the future and current value across the top. Make sure that you've got different strategies for where different groups of customers are. Obviously, a customer group with low current value but high potential value would be a targetable segment for upselling, whereas maxing out both current value and potential value would be a retained strategy, as you see over there on the right. Good example of this is some work we did for a recently for a national convenience fuel retailer who was targeting credit card customers who hadn't shopped with the retailer in the last 12 months. They weren't really doing anything other than communicating quarterly through mail campaigns, and the offer was a comeback offer, shopping so many times in the next 90 days to get some kind of reward. We helped them target that into a much more personalized mailing for those customers that were medium to high value that, based on an attrition algorithm, were at risk of attriting so that you could get them before they left. Obviously, gasoline retailing and the use of a retailer is a habit that you don't want to try to break if they're with your competition. You want to keep them with yourself. Okay, I'll mention this more and more. We're seeing a lot of our clients begin to really get serious about managing a customer life cycle. This is meant just to say that there is a point of a moment of truth where the value exchange really transitions from one of acquisition to ongoing retention, and this is where you should be looking for whether or not you're managing people across a life cycle or just doing direct marketing on an ongoing basis to campaign. Third point I want to say is use relevance as a benefit. This is an example of a program one of our partners belongs to, the Hilton Honors My Way program. You can basically stipulate what you'd like to see in the future as offers from the company. And we were very pleased to see that soon after this was done in terms of upload of personal information, some very relevant offers for vacations in Central America, which is where one of these partners indicated she'd like to go, sure enough, came by her email inbox. Obviously, if you're collecting data from customers and you don't make use of it, that actually has a negative downside on the part of customers based on our research, that people wonder what you're doing with all that information and not seeing much relevance in results. And finally, I want to show you something that inspired us last year. During the recession, United Airlines, which of course grants every year elite status to a certain number of their customers, offered them a choice in how they wanted to actualize that status. One option was to actually grant elite status to one of your friends or family in your own personal network. We thought that was a great idea to begin to bring United into a relevant dialogue, what colloquy calls the trialogue, which is the conversation that's occurring not only between the brand and the customer, but between the brand, the customer, and the customer's friends and family. And this was a great example of how relevance can be brought out into that community as well. So I've had to run through that quickly. Look, you're invited right now to become a Colloquy subscriber if you're not already. It's free. Just register on the colloquy.com website, and all of this content and a whole lot more will be yours. And I appreciated the time, and I'm going to hand it over now to Tijan to take us through some discussion about what he's up to these days.
issue.
Thanks so much, Jim. That was a great overview of sort of best practices and retention, you know, ideas for the retail industry. And I think what I'm hoping to do here is to give everyone sort of a micro view of what we've done here at Quidsi on, in the everyday essential space. And I think you'll see that we've applied some of those best practices to some of the loyalty programs we've introduced this year. So quick overview of Quidsi. Quidsi is the parent company to now five specialty online retailers. We started as diapers.com in 2005, and that has been our flagship site ever since. Our motto is we deliver everything but the baby. And last year we launched soap.com in June 2010. That was our second site. And that site carries about 30,000 health, beauty, and household essentials. Soon afterward, we launched our prestige beauty site, beautybar.com, in September 2010. This year, we launched two more sites, wag.com, targeted at the pet vertical, and yoyo.com just last week, actually, targeted at the toy space. And I think the vision for the company is to continue launching targeted, specialized sites at verticals that are tailored for a specific shopping occasion, but to also leverage that shared back end and logistics and infrastructure that we have at Quidsi. A bit more about us. We've grown into a $300 million business in 5 years. We were named the fastest growing retailer. From 2008 to 2010 on Inc. magazine. We were also named one of America's hottest brands in 2009 by Ad Age. And this year we were acquired by Amazon in April of 2011. So we are an independent subsidiary of Amazon currently. And we have over a million active high-income customers. Most of our customers, because we started as diapers.com, are busy moms. They're highly educated, high-income customers, and they simply don't have time to, you know, necessarily stand in line at the store to buy all the things that they need. Our business is built on five pillars. Speed is in our space when we deliver consumables. It's essential to have quick, really fast delivery times, and we've essentially striven to build an infrastructure and logistics platform across the country that can, for 80% of our orders, we deliver overnight. So if you order by 6 p.m., you'll get the order next day. Choice, we want to have everything that, in this case, mom and, you know, any of our consumers would like in a particular category or a specific vertical. Service, it's one of our hallmarks and, you know, something that our founders really, you know, hammered into the company that we want to have the best service available. We have 24-hour customer service, and all of our customer service sits in-house with us in our corporate office. Specialization, I think it's a strength of online retail to be able to collect data about your customers and then personalize that on-site experience. Make things easy to reorder for customers and suggest new things that they might, you know, they might want to try out based on what you know about your customers. And finally, price. You know, we want to be fair and competitive in our pricing. So what I'll do here is just take you through two case studies. One is about the diapers.com loyalty program, and the second is about the soap.com loyalty program. What you'll see here is I think we've tried to implement a lot of best practices that Jim talked about in terms of specialization, differentiation, and relevance in each one of these programs. So a little bit of context about diapers.com. It launched, as I said, in 2005. It's the online leader in the baby space. This year, there's been a lot of competitive pressure in the baby vertical. There are a lot of different competitors that have expanded their assortment. Pricing is always an issue, and, you know, diapers in and of itself is a low-margin category, and it's bulky to ship those items. So it's definitely a difficult space to plan. And just one last bit of context. When designing a loyalty program, it's always good to think about sort of what people are actually buying on your site, where are those sales concentrated. And in this case, there's a high concentration of sales for on diaper SKUs, particularly on diapers.com. Diapers.com carries all kinds of different products, strollers, car seats, et cetera, but there's a high concentration of sales on those particular SKUs for diapers. I think the team at diapers.com wanted to introduce a program that could, it was ambitious. They wanted a big retention impact from the program, but they also wanted to scale in acquisition. So they wanted the program to be able to be something that they can communicate to first-time customers and brand around that program in a way that diapers.com could be known out there in the market for its loyalty program. And not surprisingly, customer feedback prior to launch, a lot of people are buying diapers on our site and they want more of a discount on what they buy all the time. And so in June 2011, the diapers.com team introduced a program that they call Take 5. Program, in a nutshell, is $5 off of every case of diapers every time you shop on diapers.com. I included a couple of screenshots here of the different, banners and marketing collateral that the diapers.com team has gone out with. The second one below, our best offer ever, $10 off your first order, $49 or more, plus $5 off of every case of diapers. I think that's a good example of trying to get an acquisition benefit at the same time of communicating this loyalty program, and you're also trying to get people to come back at the same time. The team has done a really good job of calling that out in on-site pricing and personalizing that to customers. So you can sort of see on the bottom right of the slide, they are listing the prices with, at normal retail price, and then they're listing the Take 5 price in addition to that price and trying to really hammer home the fact that the discount on diapers you're getting on our site if you're buying those diapers. So just a little bit of an analysis on this program. I think the advantages are clearly that it is brandable. Take 5 is catchy. You can communicate it easily. I included a banner that the diapers.com team is running on the homepage of Baby Center right now, which is one of our content partners. And so clearly they are trying to get an acquisition benefit out of it. There's no sign-up process required. You just enter a promo code on site and the discount applies. So that's something that's really good about the program is it's not difficult to understand. It's very easy to communicate and digestible by customers. The trade-offs on the flip side, when you're giving a $5 discount on a SKU of diapers, that's typically $38 to $50. It can be a significant margin impact. And so that's something that the team definitely analyzed in the business case prior to introducing this program. And I think the second one is interesting. There's not necessarily a built-in cross-category encouragement in this program. So there are a lot of SKUs that we carry on diapers.com. We want you to buy your diapers, but we also want you to buy all the other things that you buy for your baby. And to focus on a particular SKU, there's always a risk that you subsidize a lot of your existing sales and you're not necessarily encouraging people to explore the site. So that is a trade-off that's always inherent in any loyalty program, especially when you center in on a particular category, a particular SKU. In this case, I think the results have been great. Not surprisingly, because so many people buy diapers on diapers.com, they love the big discount on diapers. The good news is there's also been a significant increase in both acquisition and retention for the diapers.com team. And the margin impact, while definitely large, has been managed one within business case parameters in this case. So I think this is a good example of a loyalty program that was designed for both loyalty and retention. And the team really thought about what are people buying on our site, what are our goals internally of what we want to get out of it. If we get people to buy diapers and to come back more often, can we get an average order size boost? Can we get a retention boost? Can we get more people in the door? And ultimately, can our LTV increase over time? So those were sort of some of the goals for these programs, and I think that this program so far is really meeting business case expectations. So a little bit, we'll go into the Modified Phase Program, which is the Silk.com loyalty program. And I think you can see, as I take you through the contrast between what we've done on Silk.com and what the Diapers.com team did. Silk.com, a little bit of context, it launched in July 2010. So it's been just about a year since launch. We carry over 30,000 health, beauty, and household essentials. No single category dominates sales on our site, so that's one thing to keep in mind. When the Diapers.com team looked at their business, diapers as a SKU and diapers as a category was a significant percentage of sales. In this case, on Silk.com, sales are really dispersed across multiple categories. And so, you know, perhaps a more general loyalty program may be a good call. Yeah, that's something that you'll see as I take you through the program. We have over 500,000 customers in our first year, so great results in our first year. And most customers, as I said, while we have a number of categories on site, we have 10 categories, most customers are purchasing from one to three categories. So there's a lot of room for improvement on Silk.com for us to really encourage people to shop across multiple categories and increase the share of wallet that we have from customers currently. So some of the program goals, it was always a goal of ours to introduce a loyalty program. In this case, this is really targeted at retention, not necessarily acquisition. So we want the retention benefit, and we want to encourage people to shop across categories that they're not necessarily shopping on currently on soap. I think to you know, talk a little bit about a point that Jim brought through on differentiation.
I used to work at American Express, so I was very familiar with sort of the points, cash back, space, and loyalty. And with this program, I think what we wanted to do is try something a little bit different that didn't have, you know, the same sort of earned theme construct that's, you know, been introduced in loyalty and really, you know, beat into the ground for the past 20 years. So we wanted to try something different, and hopefully by trying something different, we were aiming for something that could break through the clutter that's in the market for all of those different programs. We also wanted a program that was easy to communicate, that we could brand around. And I think one other point I'd say is QuidCF, as a company, we like to think of our strength as user experience, as personalization, and in selection. And we wanted a program that could leverage all those strengths in a way that perhaps other companies couldn't. And finally, customer feedback prior to the launch of the program. You know, not surprisingly, since we didn't have a loyalty program, we did hear from time to time, hey, you know, do you guys have any discounts for returning customers? So a little bit about the results of the program. The advantages of the program, as, you know, we sketched it out prior to launch, it's brandable, definitely something that's a little bit different. You know, the thing that we really liked about it, it's personalized for each customer. And I'm sorry, I actually didn't even explain much about the program. It launched in this year in June 2011. And the program essentially, it's called My Five Faves. You get 10% off your five favorite products. You choose one product per category on our site, up to five categories. So you can go into the household category, choose your toilet paper or laundry detergent as a fave, and then you can go to hair care, choose your conditioner as a fave, you know, go to vitamins and supplements, choose a fave from there. And every time you order your fave on soap.com, you'll get a 10% discount. You can lock in your faves for 90 days, and after 90 days, you can, quote-unquote, break up with your faves. Or you can, you know, stay together with your faves and continue saving on it without having to do anything. So, you know, we launched the program a couple of months ago with high expectations for increasing retention. This slide contains one of the inserts that we use to market the programs to our customer base, and we really have tried to say that, you know, you can choose your favorite products, you know, essentially they're always on sale. Whatever you want, it's going to be on sale for 90 days, and if you want to keep saving, go right ahead. And we've tried to communicate that in a way that's easily digestible for customers and doesn't feel like an onerous sign-up process. So little bit about the results of the program. You know, it is personalized for every customer. That's something that we felt really good about that would resonate with our customer base, because sales are really dispersed across multiple categories. It was difficult to choose a particular category to try to incent customers to shop on or try to give them reward on. And so it became a very interesting strategy to essentially say, you know what, why don't you choose your discount? And, you know, every 90 days you can change it or keep it exactly the same. The power is in your hands as a customer. You know, the one save per category from a program design standpoint, I think, helps us really limit the margin impact. You know, as an example, you can go into the hair care category, you can choose your shampoo as a save, but you can't choose your conditioner as a save. That we really want to get full price on. And so, you know, that to a certain extent limits subsidization risk and also helps us with the margin impact for this program, while at the same time encouraging you to go to another category and use your additional 10% discount that you can get on a category that you're not currently shopping on. And finally, the potential for vendor engagement. I think that's something that, you know, we felt great about, and we've only really scratched the surface so far, we think, on soap.com. You know, there's a strong incentive for vendors to get involved with the program. I tasted a screenshot of an email we sent out recently, make Charmin a fave and get a $5 credit for Charmin. You know, you can clearly see that vendors would want to know a lot of data that we're collecting about our customers in terms of what are your faves. If you've selected Charmin as a fave, maybe that makes you a great customer for P&G, a great customer for Charmin. What else might you want to buy from P&G? What other products might you be interested in from the same brand family or from a larger master brand? Trade-offs for this program, the Bakers.com program, which had no sign-up process. I think the trade-off in this case could be that there is a sign-up process, there is a commitment required. You have to go on site, you have to pick your fave. And so what I would say is that, you know, that can always have the potential of limiting the amount of people who might engage with the program. You have to get them to go to a URL to sign up. And, you know, the last thing I'd say is the design for this program, it's, you know, designed to encourage cross-category shopping, but at the same time, that design could also limit engagement because people may think, you know, 10%, is that really enough to motivate me to shop across categories? I really want more of a discount on the things I'm shopping for right now, and they may all be in one category. Fortunately, the results for this program so far have been great. In the last 3 to 4 months, we've enrolled 30% of our existing customer base. Very positive feedback from customers. We didn't have a loyalty program. I think they were expecting something that was more of a vanilla cashback or points program, and they're really happy with the personalization aspect of this program and the fact that you know, there are essentially very few restrictions in terms of caps or anything like that. You can order as many items of the same SKU as you want, and there are very few restrictions from that standpoint. Significant increases in retention and cross-category shopping. We've seen people engage with categories that they weren't really shopping on soap.com before, and so I think we are getting that increase in share of wallet that we were hoping for. And the margin impact has been more than manageable. I think business case, we tried to be very conservative in our estimates, and in this case, we found that people are engaging with the program, but they're also shopping on our site and buying things at full price when they're not necessarily using the program. So that's a great thing to see from our end. And so at this point, I'd like to kick it back to Joe and Jim to see if we wanted to start the Q&A session.
Yeah, thanks. A lot of great insight there from both Jim and Teju. Going to have a little time here for some question and answer. Again, if you haven't put in your question, you can use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. So I'll jump right in. The first question we have here is, can either of you touch on non-transactional rewards programs, especially where it relates to the social space, customer reviews, Either of you guys have any thoughts on that?
So, Joe, is that the extent of the question?
Yeah, as far as non-transactional reward programs and, your thoughts on those types of programs.
Yeah, well, the one that comes to mind is the decouples rewards from specifically the idea in consumers' minds that they're collecting points. I think the one that maybe most people are familiar with in the bricks-and-mortar world would be the Panera card. Panera designed that specifically to move away from what we call the if-then reward, which is if you collect and, you know, transact at a certain rate, then you accrue a certain benefit counted for in points or some kind of miles or other currency, and you attain thresholds that you understand ahead of time and you're compensated with a reward. We classify Panera's design more as a now-that reward, which is as you show your card and, you know, as you transact and visit, Panera takes the burden off of you to become part of the accounting team, and they handle that. And they surprise you from time to time with a cup of coffee or some breakfast item or something else as you go. I think that there are a couple of things I would say about that kind of program. And by the way, I think the questioner asked a series of or had an oblique reference back to some online things that are happening too. But let's just stay with the Panera example. I'm more familiar with that, actually. There is a risk over time of an if-then reward structure and system becoming an expectation on the part of customers and actually having them over-focus on the currency and the reward rather than on the relationship with the brand. And obviously when I think a good example of this might be incentives internally that are applied for employee engagement often become entitlements over time. And there's the danger of an if-then reward. We think that's mitigated in large part by the healthy dose of soft benefits, as Colloquy calls them, in addition to the hard dollar rewards of being a frequent and loyal customer, from time to time being surprised with recognition benefits, status-oriented benefits or special perks that are not necessarily part of the reward structure, but of course are completely open to be creatively addressed by brands. That is the best structure we know of empirically, because we test these things with clients and other prospects who are interested in just or partners interested in knowing what's the best mix of rewards. And that seems to always draw the most incremental volume, that combination of hard dollar benefits through classic currency and the combination of soft benefits that are offered on a now that you've been a great customer, we'd like to thank you for that or recognize you somehow. So I would just comment that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, the next question we have in is, when looking at the customer life cycle, at which points do you feel are the key areas to inject touch points as part of strengthening loyalty? And then kind of a second part to that, which loyalty points so far have seen or are tracking the highest conversion rates?
Well, Paige, if you don't mind, I'll comment briefly on that, and it's an excellent question. And, of course, I have an excellent answer that says it depends on the nature of the brand and the category and a lot of other things that can't be generalized. However, since we're on this call, I'll generalize that I think that there are two or three critical junctures. One is the enrollment, obviously, but even more critical than that is an enrolled customer being nurtured into the ongoing habit of participating in your program, be that a credit card or some kind of loyalty engagement program where you're needing to habituate the particular behavior that you need in order to get that great transaction-rich stream of information and involve the customer more deeply in the value proposition, not only of the program but of the brand. So that first 3 to 9 months of nurturing the relationship from enrollment fully through to habitual engagement, I think, is an obvious critical point. Another one that's emerging much farther down the life cycle, is that point at which transactional and rational loyalty might emerge into emotional loyalty, or real commitment to the brand, where the customer feels so well treated, so consistently delivered to, and so honored for their patronage that it's become remarkable to them. And I use that word specifically because that is when transactional loyalty translates to advocacy, which is a social risk for your customers to take when they recommend or refer you to their friends and family. And that's a critical juncture that Colloquy is looking into right now with a lot of research. What happens in the heart and the mind of a consumer when they make that shift? I think those are two that pop out in my mind.
Okay. Another question we have in is, as far as gathering feedback prior to the launch of a loyalty program, and I guess maybe this one, Teju, you could jump on. Did you steer the questions towards a specific idea, or was it pretty open as far as your questions? And then how do you go about determining how many questions in a survey and how wide to be able to pinpoint down to a feedback theme worthy of a loyalty program launch?
Sure, I think good question. And I want to apologize for the poor sound quality on my end during this call. I think a lot of the surveys that we've done at Quidsy, we've had an idea of the type of program or the types that we're thinking about launching, and then we've sent out the survey. So, you know, typically for diapers.com, we might have had three ideas for the loyalty program, and that's when we send out a survey saying to our customers, you know, what are the different types of constructs or what are the different types of discounts you might prefer? And we've kept those questions you know, to a maximum typically of five questions when we sent it out. So I think that, you know, that's sort of the approach that we've taken here at Quidsy.
Okay. Great. Well, we're just about out of time. We've covered a lot of ground here today. So I want to take this opportunity to thank Jim and Teju for their time this afternoon. On behalf of Retail Online Integration and Bronto, I also want to thank you for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Please also check out the agenda for the rest of the day. We have several wonderful sessions lined up and encourage you to view as many as you can. Remember, if you can't watch them live, add them to your briefcase and view at your convenience in the on-demand environment. Have a great evening, everyone.